Amy McCready, founded Positive Parenting Solutions, Inc. in 2004 and developed the popular and successful Breakthrough course that has changed the lives of thousands of parents through in-person seminars, speeches, and online webinars. Early this year, Amy launched the Breakthrough course online to give parents everywhere the skills, knowledge, and tools to correct their children's misbehaviors to permanently without nagging, reminding, or yelling. She speaks to them one-on-one through the most advanced and thorough Web 2.0 parenting course available today. Amy is frequently asked to provide expert parenting advice for print and online parenting articles. She's a sought-after speaker, writer, parenting coach, trainer, and most importantly, mom. Amy, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm delighted to be with you this morning.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here. Now, I want to begin with the article. In it, you say, I've worked with thousands of parents, and I can tell you without question that screaming is the new spanking. And Amy, my question is, why do you think this is so prevalent, and what can we do to reverse this trend?
Well, I think the reason it's so prevalent is what you shared from the article, is that parents and society at large kind of recognizes that spanking isn't a really effective discipline tool. Parents don't feel good about it. It's not really effective in changing behavior. So they've moved away from that as sort of the go-to disciplinary tool. But in the absence of other tools that really work and that they can use consistently, they get into this pattern where they ask their kids to do something, and then they have to repeat and remind and repeat and remind, and then they raise their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe it's a big tantrum and they explode, or maybe it's just raising their voice to a level that they're not, you know, they don't really enjoy and their kids don't enjoy, but then they feel guilty afterwards, and it's just a vicious cycle that continues.
Yeah, you know, I used to live next door to a woman who pretty much regularly yelled at her young children, and I tried to talk about it in a friendly way, and she just said, I'm a yeller, I come from a family of yellers, so that's the way we are, and she seemed almost proud of it, like, that's just how we are, and it's fine, and she didn't see it as a problem, whereas I did. And, you know, in the article, it actually says, quote, psychologists and psychiatrists generally say yelling should be avoided. It's at best ineffective. The more you do it, the more the child tunes out, and at worst, damaging to a child's sense of well-being and self-esteem. Now, what's your opinion about the effects of children of yelling on children?
Well, as you know, there have been more studies done on the effects of spanking, but not as many studies done on the effects of yelling. But if we just think of it from our kids' perspective, for young children, it's a pretty scary thing.
Yes.
We do an exercise with parents in classes where we sort of simulate that dynamic, and we have one adult on the floor on their knees who is playing the child, and then another adult standing on a chair who, of course, is playing the parent. And just that size difference alone is just dramatic. When you put on top of that a big, booming, angry voice, it is really intimidating and scary for kids. And what we hear over and over again is that the kids don't even hear the message. They hear the volume and they feel the anger, but they can't even tell you what they were being yelled at about. So it's a scary thing, and I think it does impact a child's sense of self-esteem. It certainly impacts the parent-child relationship. And it doesn't work to correct behavior, and that's why parents end up yelling about the same things over and over again.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I grew up in a house with a lot of yelling. Now, the yelling wasn't directed at me. It was my mother was always yelling at my brother, and that's why I'm so sensitive to it, and it affected me. I get when somebody even, you know, someone will be upset, and I'll immediately assume that, you know, oh, what did I do? Or, you know, my husband will be like, you haven't seen the person in a month. Well, why do you think they're mad at you? And I think that it really does. And I wasn't even the one being yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it not only affects the child who's being yelled at, but it affects the siblings and the whole dynamic of the family.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is, you know, I just mentioned how younger kids react. But for older kids, you know, of course, when we yell, they learn to tune us out. It becomes a learned behavior where they kind of go into self-protection mode when we're yelling at kids. So they're not, the reason they don't hear our message is because they're in self-protection mode. They're trying to almost protect themselves from the storm, and eventually kids just learn to tune that out. And for teenagers particularly, you know, they just, it goes in one ear and out the other. They don't even hear the message. So they become pretty skilled at dealing with the yelling, but it just doesn't work to correct behavior. So then we do more of it, and as I said before, the whole cycle continues.
Well, that's why I'm glad that you're on today, because we have, you know, enough time that I can actually ask for examples of, okay, let's try this instead of the yelling. And as a matter of fact, I received some emails from some listeners who knew you were coming on the show.
Okay.
And one is Cindy. She's from Gary, Indiana, and she writes, my 8-year-old daughter does not pick up after herself, and her room is a total mess. I get so frustrated that I end up yelling. What are some strategies that I can do to end the yelling and to actually get her to pick up her room?
Okay, that's a great one. It's so common. You said she's 8 years old?
Yes.
The daughter. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, before I answer Cindy's question, I just wanted to make one other quick comment about this issue of yelling. I think when this article came out in the New York Times, there was just this firestorm of responses, particularly in the blog community. And a lot of parents were saying, you know, they tell us we can't spank, and now they're telling us we can't yell at our kids. What's next? And I don't think the intent of the article was to judge parents in any way. But this is what parents were telling us in terms of, you know, it's the number one thing that I hear that parents want to work on. Just like Cindy said in Indiana, she doesn't want to be yelling at her daughter about cleaning up her room. She's looking for a different tool. So I hope parents will take this not as a judgment, but as a recognition that, you know, there is some training that needs to take place so we can learn the tools and the skills that really work to get our kids to clean up their room without us having to get to the point where we're yelling.
Exactly.
But let me get to Cindy's question,
sure,
because this comes up all the time. Cindy, one of the things when it comes to like cleaning up your room or cleaning up after themselves, we have to recognize that that's really our problem, not the child's. The child, in most cases, could care less if their room is a mess. We care about that. And when it's our problem, we have to set up a situation where there's a consequence involved. And so we would sit down with the daughter and say, you know, lately we've been arguing a lot about you cleaning up your room. I feel like I have to do a lot of reminding and nagging. Eventually I raise my voice, and that's not fun for either of us. So in the future, I'm going to ask you that to have your room cleaned up by dinner time, and decide what the time limit is, whatever, you know, whenever it is. By dinner time, I expect that your room is going to be cleaned up. If you choose not to clean up your room, that's okay. I'll come in and do it. But anything that's laying around on the floor, any clothes, any toys, they're going to go into a box, and they're going to go into the garage for the week, and you're not going to have those available to you. So it's totally up to you. And then you would ask the child, okay, you know, what is your understanding of what our new rule is? Well, I need to have my room cleaned up by 5 o'clock. And what will happen if your room isn't cleaned up by 5 o'clock? And then have the child repeat the consequence back to you. Now you have a verbal agreement, and the child has the choice. It becomes their problem now. They can either clean up the room as asked, or mom will go in and do it, but anything that's laying around goes into a box into the garage for the week.
Now, that is a great solution. You know, do you find, though, that sometimes, because I, you know, I'm guilty of this, that sometimes I'll give my child, she's 5, a consequence, and then I'll feel bad, so I'll be like, well, okay, I'll give you one more chance, and then it kind of all of a sudden the consequence is gone. Do you find that, or is that just my problem?
No, it's not just your problem, believe me. And I think the reason we feel bad is because we don't do a sufficient job of revealing the consequence in advance.
Going through that
conversation that I just described, that puts the child on notice, and they repeated the rule back to you, they repeated the consequence back to you, so there's no misunderstanding whatsoever. So there's no reason for you to feel bad after the fact.
I see.
And after the first day, believe me, the child will be much more aware of picking up their things, and at the end of the week, then she can have the toys back or whatever clothes or whatever in that box, and she can try again. So we don't have to get ugly about it or scream or yell. But, you know, you laid it out ahead of time, so there's no reason for you to feel bad. You can, with confidence, implement that consequence.
And you can do that for all kinds of things. I mean, whether it's cleaning their room or too much TV time or computer time or not coming to the table when you ask them. I mean, it's taking things that are important to them, and if they're taken away, that's going to help, you know, get them to do what you're asking them to do.
Yes, and the important thing that when we're structuring a consequence, one of the things that we review in our online training, much of it is free, by the way, is there are sort of do's and don'ts for structuring an effective consequence. And so you just want to make sure that revealing in advance, that's one of the most important things, that you definitely take the time to do that. Otherwise, it feels like punishment to the child, and they kind of turn the anger back on you. But yes, you can use that process for a lot of different misbehaviors.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem I'm having, is that I'm already upset, and even though I'm not yelling, I sort of just, I'm like, okay, that's it. Now, you know, I asked you, you didn't clean it. I'm taking, you know, Huggy Bear or whatever. So, you know, instead of being like, okay, let's talk about this. So that's, oh, that's wonderful advice. Now, this is a question from Kristen from Redding, California. And she says, I'm 12 and my 17-year-old sister and my mom are always yelling at each other. I want to say something. I'm not sure what to say. Plus, I don't want to get in the middle of it and I don't want them to yell at me. So what, you know, what can I do to help the situation?
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Well, the first thing I would do is sit down with mom and sister when everybody is calm, not in the heat of the moment, and I recommend starting these conversations with what I call I feel statements.
Yeah, those are good.
So I feel upset, I feel anxious, I feel nervous, whatever her feelings are when that happens. I feel anxiety when you guys are yelling at each other, and I would like to work on ways that we can fix that. Now, if you do that, if you don't go through the I feel process and you address it in the heat of the moment when everybody's upset, it's not going to be effective. Or if you start that with you always or you never, when we attack the other person, then, again, they get defensive, and they're not open to learning and not open to changing. But I think that Kristen would be well served by sitting down and having one of those I feel safe conversations with mom and sister and talk about different ways that we could work through these problems without yelling.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, the I feel and using the I. My parents used to call it I messages when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's funny, my mom used to yell a lot. On the other hand, she had this whole thing about using I messages. When I was really little, I thought it meant like a certain look that you give somebody. So I would like kind of make my eye and they'd be like, no, that's not what we're talking about. Anyway, I messages are great in so many situations because then you're not going to put the person on the defensive and then they're more apt to listen.
Absolutely. And that not only applies to conversation with our kids, but certainly with our spouses, friends, whoever it happens to be. And it's a great thing to model for your kids. When they hear you using I feel statements, then they just learn that that's kind of the way we communicate. We don't put the other person on defensive. We take responsibility for the way we feel about things and then focus on solutions to change the situation.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. This actually leads right into our next question, which I think is going to have a similar answer. This was actually an anonymous they said they didn't want to use their name. My best friend is always yelling at her kids. I want to say something, but I don't want to ruin our friendship. If you have any advice, that would be great.
That's such a hard thing. That's a little bit what you described.
Yeah. That didn't go over well. I mean, at first she was really nice, but after that, you know, that we weren't, she wasn't, every time I waved, she pretty much ignored me.
Well, and I think one of the reasons is, you know, we take our parenting so personally, and when somebody makes a comment about that, mm-hmm. it's almost viewed as a personal attack, which I'm sure this is, you know, her
friend, yeah.
You know, they don't, but certainly the person bringing up the issue never means it for it to be that way. But I think getting into a conversation about almost commiserating about situations with your own kids and sometimes how you get frustrated by different behaviors and how sometimes you raise your own voice and you don't want to. And I'm with parents in my classes, I always suggest, they say, oh, you know, I signed up for this free webinar and I learned so many great tools, I couldn't believe it. And I tried it and it really worked. And more talk about how things that you've learned have helped you as opposed to focusing on their behavior and what they're doing wrong. Modeling either a behavior that works or talking about a resource that you found that has been super helpful for you is often a great way to, you know, pique the other person's interest.
I just want to let everyone know that you are listening to Thinking Out Loud on WUML Lowell 91.5 FM, and this is It's Your Health, and I'm on with Amy McCready, and we're going to talk about positive parenting solutions now. So, Amy, if you can tell us about your organization.
Yes, I would love to. Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, we're positiveparentingsolutions.com, and we offer online parenting education. We have a lot of free online training that we do for parents who just want to, you know, kind of check it out. And then we have a comprehensive parenting education programs. And the reason it really works for parents is we help them target the root cause of the behavior. Because so many of these behaviors that we're talking about, whether it be attitude or backtalk or not cleaning your room or ignoring your requests, they all have a root cause. And once parents understand the root cause of the behavior, they can be so much more effective in correcting it. And then the other thing we help parents do is understand how they contribute to the behavior. And this is always really eye-opening because we always kind of think it's our kids that need to be fixed, when in reality, it's a lot about how we respond to their behaviors that actually make the power struggles worse. So we help parents kind of understand why these behaviors are happening in the first place, what we do to contribute to the behavior, and then the strategies to address it. And once you, again, as long as you're addressing that root cause, you can correct these behaviors permanently, so it's not an ongoing cycle that just continues.
I see. You know, and I want to go back to the yelling for a moment. Do you think some parents yell because it kind of feels good? I mean, I'll admit it right up front. Like, what I'll sometimes do is I won't yell, but then I'll, like, at my daughter, but then I'll, like, go outside and be like, ah, you know, like just like a primal scream kind of thing. You know, I can't believe I just admitted that, but it just, sometimes it just feels good. And so it seems like it's just a way to get your tension out, but there's got to be other ways.
Absolutely. Okay. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with going outside and having a primal scream. Sometimes we just have to get that off our chest. Ah. The important thing is that we don't involve the other person in the process.
Okay.
Because when we're feeling so frustrated and overwhelmed, that is a gut reaction, is to raise our voice and yell. But we're better off going outside and just, you know, having a little temper tantrum without the child involved, and then come back and address it in a more calm way.
Yeah.
But, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, Lisa. No. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, there will be, as much as we're aware of it, and I really ask parents to be aware of their voice, and I recommend putting post-it notes in key places on your refrigerator, in the car, wherever, that just say calm voice or CV, to kind of make you aware of using your calm voice. Because for a lot of us, if you've grown up in a house of yellers, that just becomes your gut reaction.
Yeah.
So if you can be aware of it, that's important. But when you do yell, recognize that, you know what, we're all human, and there's nothing wrong with going to your child and say, you know what, I was feeling frustrated and I was feeling angry because, you know, I've asked you to clean up the room and it didn't get done, but I let that anger out by yelling at you, and that's not okay.
Yeah. No.
So it's okay to have those angry feelings. It's okay to feel frustrated. It's just not okay to use those feelings to, you know, hurt somebody else or to yell at somebody else.
You know,
and
I've
again,
done
that's
that.
Great modeling.
If I have yelled, I've done that. And I'll actually say I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry that wasn't the right thing to do. And, but yeah, it's tough. I mean, even for someone who, you know, who has an awareness or who grew up with yelling, and I'm trying to go the other way. Yeah, it's in there still. I have to fight against it. And I'm sure there's other parents out there who grew up with it and they don't want to be doing it, but it just, you know, they just, that's what they were used to.
Yeah. And I think too, when you have other tools that you can go to, when you have a toolbox of really good concrete strategies that work, you can use those 90% of the time. And so then maybe, you know, if you mess up and you lose it 10% of the time, not such a big deal. But I think what happens is when parents don't have those resources, don't have the tools and the strategies that really work, they end up raising their voice a lot more than they would like to.
Now, is one of the tools like getting down on a level with your child? This is what I think I've read, that you can, you know, talk quietly with them and kind of engage them face to face versus you being up high and them being down low and you yelling.
Yes. And very often, I don't know if this ever happens in your house, but sometimes, you know, we yell something, not yell like in a mean voice, but, you know, we shout to the other room, hey, can you guys turn off the TV? Or, hey, it's almost time for dinner. I need you to clean your room, whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm always doing
it. But we're doing it from another room because we're preoccupied with some other task.
Of course.
But if we, you know, get, as you described, down on their level, eye to eye, and be very clear about what we need them to do, and again, ask them to repeat back just so they're perfectly clear on what you've asked. Again, now we have a verbal agreement, and we're much more likely that that's going to get done. If it doesn't get done, then we may have to go to another one of the tools or a consequence if necessary. But I think you're absolutely on target. Starting out with that eye-to-eye discussion is going to be much more effective for us.
Yeah, I know a lot of parents like myself that it's just easier. You're in the middle of something. and you just yell, would you please turn that down or come over here? And it's easier for them to ignore you, you know? Or my daughter will be like, I just yelled up. I'd be up in a minute, but you weren't listening, you know?
And then you say, don't yell from the basement. As you just yelled down to them, right?
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. There's so many great tools. Now, if people want to sign up, they need to go give us your website and let us know. We have a few more minutes, but I just want to make sure the people, I'm sure, have their pens ready.
Yes. Well, in fact, we have a few free training opportunities that are going to be coming up in the next couple of days, which they can go to our website and sign up for. And it's positiveparentingsolutions.com. Look for the little section on free training, and it will tell you the different topics. For instance, some of the topics we have coming up in the next few days are why time out is a waste of time.
Oh, that's interesting. I'd love to hear more about that. If you can talk about that for a, you know, like I said, we still have a few more minutes. Such a common one, and wow.
It is. And there are certain strategies, like timeout, counting 1, 2, 3, using rewards. We talk about why those are really counterproductive for long-term behavior change, and then, of course, what you can do instead. But let's talk about timeout for a minute.
Sure.
You know, pediatricians tell you to use timeout. Anything that you read, it's always about timeout. The nanny shows, they're all big on the timeout or the naughty chair. But for a spirited child, and that's a child who has a lot of power, if you will,
mm-hmm.
you know, they see timeout as a challenge. And timeout I should define as when you send the child to your room, you know, go to your room or go to the naughty chair for 15 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
A spirited child will view that as a challenge, and they are not going to stay in the timeout chair for 10 minutes. And then it becomes your job to keep them in the timeout chair for 10 minutes, which only invites this power struggle. So it becomes this power struggle with basically the child digging in his heels saying, you're not going to make me, and the mom saying, oh, yes, I will. And this big power struggle ensues. So that's the first problem with timeout, is it just invites a power struggle. The second problem is when the child is in timeout, they're not thinking, you know, I really made a bad choice. If this happens to me again, I'm going to go a different route. They're not thinking about their behavior and how they're going to change it. They're just thinking about how mean you are for putting them in timeout in the first place. So, again, we're not creating that learning experience so the child can learn for the future. Mm-hmm. So instead, again, we learn how to set up a consequence using the four R's that are much more effective in helping the child learn for the future. If it's not a consequence that is in order, then maybe it's another one of the tools. But, again, I really avoid the use of timeout. Counting 1, 2, 3 is another one. A lot of parents use this when they ask the child to do something, and the child doesn't respond. And so they say 1, 2, and by 3, we expect that child to be jumping to do whatever we've asked.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is we set up the situation where the child knows that he has 3, really 4 times before he has to respond. We ask once and then we count 3 times.
Now,
well, the teacher isn't going to wait until the count of 3 for the child to respond. You know, it's just not realistic. We train them that they don't have to listen the first time, that they'll get 3 more chances.
Oh, okay. Now, you had said something earlier about the 4 R's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are the 4 R's?
Well, we go into this in depth. In fact, in the course, there's a whole section, the whole session on consequences. But briefly, the 4 R's of a consequence are, first, it has to be respectful to the child and to the adult. So, again, you know, spanking and screaming and yelling wouldn't really be respectful or effective, for that matter. The second R is it has to be related to the misbehavior. So earlier when we talked about the situation with cleaning the room and mm-hmm. the mess left all over the place, so Cindy in that situation, if she revealed it in advance and went and picked up all the toys and put them into the garage, that would be perfectly related to that misbehavior of not cleaning up the room. It has to be reasonable in duration. So for that mom, she had an 8-year-old, so a week, losing the toys for a week would be reasonable. And then the fourth R would be revealed in advance, and that's that discussion that we had where we reveal the consequence in advance, we put the child on notice, and then you can feel perfectly confident implementing the consequence and holding firm to that for the whole week.
Okay. Now, I just have one last question. I have a daughter who has some special needs, Asperger's, anxiety. She's also, and I'm not bragging, but she's also intellectually gifted. So she understands a lot of stuff, but she also is overstimulated easily and loses it easily. So do you have any advice for parents of kids with special needs? Of maybe, do you have anything on that? Just because it's a little bit more challenging, obviously.
Yes, that can be more challenging, and we work with so many parents who have, you know, kids, you know, on the autism spectrum, or have any number of other learning challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But I often recommend that for kids who have some special challenges, that having visual cues can be important. So we want to get out of the situation where we're constantly reminding the child what they need to do, but having a checklist or something, some visual cue that they can use to sort of self-monitor themselves, that can be very helpful, particularly for kids who get overly stimulated. Helping them with training and training them on ways that they can calm their body, they can calm their voice, they can sort of self-manage those feelings of anxiety that they get, that's real important. And we didn't even talk about the whole issue of training, but that's such a big part of our parenting job, is training our kids to deal with the feelings that they have, training them on the appropriate behaviors, training them on useful and helpful responses. You know, that's a big part of what we cover as well.
Wow. Well, Amy, I would love to have you back on again. Maybe you can come on every few months and be our parenting expert. I mean, you are wonderful. And if you can give us your website again.
Well, thank you so much. Yes, I would love to come back. This has been great fun. The time just went too quickly.
I know. I can't believe.
That's always the way it is when we start talking about behavior and discipline. But certainly parents can learn more at positiveparentingsolutions.com. Check out the free training. We'd love to work with you.